How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick. And as always, I'm joined by my good buddy, Ronald. Ronnie, a little hot over there in Spain, hey?
Very. A little bit cold over there in Pretoria. You have electricity now.
Yeah, we do. So there was a massive power failure here in Pretoria last night. And it matched up nicely with the big cold front that Cape Townians have sent our way. So thank you for that, Cape Town. Along with expensive tickets, you're sending us cold fronts too.
And puffer jackets, skinny jeans.
Yeah, all of those things. But yeah, it was freezing cold here in Pretoria last night. Then no electricity.
How long was the electricity out for? Because you guys haven't had load shedding in over 100 days now or something, I saw. And then the lights go out. So what did you think?
But that's exactly the problem. And remember, I said it on the podcast a few weeks ago, months ago. I was like, we haven't had load shedding for so long. I packed away all my extension cords and the UPSs and all of that. And then whack, last night the power goes out. Guess who's scavenging all around the house again for extension cords?
I still got the group that the complex that I used to stay at, they send all the notifications, and I saw basically the whole of Charney was gone. So
it was ridiculous. But Ronnie, on to happier things. At the weekend, I was at Loftus. I went there with your dad and Opa. Guys would have seen your dad there on the Instagram Live. Ralph giving a bit of a shout out and some information on the weather and the pitch. And then, I must give Loftus credit, Ronnie. They managed the beer tent well. They had guys running around with cooler boxes on their back to distribute beer. So that was very, very good. I did feel very sorry for the ladies with the bathroom situation, but that one seems inevitable these days. It's, not great. Yeah, so it was really lucky at the stadium to be there with everybody. But Opa forgot his Swiss Army knife on his belt. So he lost that at the security check-in at the gate, unfortunately. And that's a knife he's probably had for a good 20 years.
Opa, that's a little bit unfortunate. But yes, I agree with you. Loftus is a great occasion now. The last time, I can't remember which game it was that we watched there last year. But, that was the first time that I really, thoroughly enjoyed Loftus. In the past, it was always a little bit crap. You couldn't drink. Well, the drinking was quite limited. It was very crowded in the beer tent area. It was very hot. But at least the last time it was awesome. And they seem to have improved on that.
No, definitely. I definitely need to review their rating because they've done much, much better this time around. And funny enough, you're right. The last game we were there for was last year. And it was to watch the Wallabies versus the Springboks, Eddie Jones's first game in charge of the Wallabies.
That's right. That's what it was. I forgot about that. I'm glad Loftus is... Where would we put Loftus in the pecking order now? Is it Cape Town top, then Loftus, then Mbombela, or what's your order?
I think it's Cape Town, Mbombela, Kings Park, Loftus. So Loftus...
Oh, Ricky, you put Kings Park ahead of Loftus.
Yeah, Loftus is now pipping PE. Maybe because I haven't been to PE since 2016.
Since the last Irish tour.
Yeah, that's the one.
No, look, I Kings Park, sure. Kings Park is very fun, but I put Loftus ahead of Kings Park.
Okay, sure. Okay. Well, we'll see. I'm off to Durban this weekend to go watch the game down there. So I'll give you an up-to-date review on the stadium next week's episode. But Ronnie, also this national anthem at Loftus this weekend was electric. I know you've mentioned seeing it on TV was epic. But we took that video in the stadium, which World Rugby tried to claim as their own because of the quality of the footage. We'll get on to that. But that video has got over 700,000 views now. So guys, if you haven't seen it, please go check it out on our page. It would be so lucky if we could hit 1 million with that video.
Would it be lucky? Would you feel proud of yourself for having a video of that caliber in your possession?
I would. It would be the biggest video we've had out there so far. So that would be really, really cool to see. And then, Ronnie, a little confession needs to happen here. So your old high school coach was sat next to me in the stadium, and he told me that you were the best orange peeler he ever had.
Yeah, the best orange peeler and also the best eighth grade, but very, very good at orange peeling too. Yeah.
Okay, you got a lot of practice orange peeling because you didn't play eighth man very often.
No. Listen, you just because I say one thing doesn't make another thing untrue. So you have to understand that this is how things work. You as a lawyer should understand that. I'm surprised you don't. But what happened is I was a good eighth man, an excellent eighth man. but an even better orange peeler, right? So good at orange peeling that it's memorable. I mean, in the history of orange peelers, I'm the greatest. And then, unfortunately, not the greatest eighth man, but definitely top two.
Top two from Uplands College, hey, Ronald? Well done. So we have a question from one of our listeners, Jonathan, about the role of an eighth man, which we'll get onto when we talk about the Springboks game. And I'm going to give that to you to answer, Ronnie. But Josh, just shout out to everyone that writes in on a weekly basis and sends us encouragement, sends us questions. We really do appreciate it, guys. Me more than Ronnie, as you can see, he's the grumpy one on the show. But we really do enjoy you guys reaching out. So please continue to do it. Over to the weekend's action then. A lot of international rugby on the cards, kicking off on Friday already with a surprising or not so surprising 33-25 point win for the Samoans over Italy. Come from behind win for the guys, a 10 point deficit that they overcame to snatch a win.
Yeah, look, it's the home field advantage. I believe that that's where they dug deep. They had that energy to, they had that place that they could go to and pull some energy from and, you know, secure a win for their home fans. So that's ultimately what Samoa was able to do. But, you know, just thinking about this, I think I'm extremely jealous of the Italians right now because, you know, they're going to go play Tonga now and they've just traveled all the way from Italy over into Samoa to the Pacific Islands. You know, that's going to be incredible. Imagine doing your warm-ups and looking at crystal clear blue water and coconut trees.
Yeah, people normally have to go on the show Survivor to get there.
Goodness.
Ronnie, then a game I didn't manage to catch, but a good win for another Pacific Island nation in Fiji as they beat the Georgians 21 points to 12. So well done to the Flying Fijians on that one.
Yeah, excellent job.
Then the US of A, said in my best Borat accent, they went down at home 20 points to 22 against Romania. Now, Romania qualified for the World Cup, had an indifferent campaign, USA failing to qualify for the World Cup, and they're hosting the World Cup after the Aussies. What do you make of this loss from them, Ronnie?
Yeah, I think we both got it wrong. I think we both backed the USA last week. We pipped them for the win. But I did make a comment, and I feel like we need to just revisit this. I did say that Romania is not going to be a walkover, which I absolutely won't because they won the game. But yeah, going down to 13-13 and then still winning the game, yeah, well done to Romania. And, you know, there's a lot of great games out there, and we often write off these teams like the USA, like Romania, but this was an excellent game if you managed to watch it. Very exciting.
Yeah, no, it really was, Ronnie. It really was. Major League Rugby not seeming to have the effect on the national side yet that was envisaged by it. Ronnie, then over to New Zealand, where Razor got his coaching tenure underway, head coach of the All Blacks. They got a 1-point win over England, 16 points to 15. And, you know, suddenly on the internet, a 1-point win is not just luck anymore.
Yeah, there was a lot of comments about our series of 1-point wins in the World Cup. And it's nice to see when it happens to another team. But yes, I thought this was an excellent game. I thought England played exceptionally well. Unfortunately, they didn't manage to pull off a win, but they were very, very close. And I think the All Blacks can be a bit lucky to have come away with a win there, because I think England perhaps deserved it a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, the confidence of the Kiwis going into this one was definitely evident on the socials. But on our match day poll for the winner, it was something like 93% of our followers picked the All Blacks to win. So 1 point loss by the English definitely makes for an interesting second test lineup this weekend. Ronnie, DMAC and the timer. So as everyone that watched that game would have seen, DMAC was denied a conversion attempt because he went over the shot clock time limit. And now the Kiwis are going to introduce an actual timer in the stadium to keep track of this. Why was that not done in the first place?
No, look, I can understand if it's bloody Pecanwood versus St. Dunstan's. They don't have a clock there, but in these world-class stadiums, you know, there absolutely needs to be a clock somewhere for the player to. They've got big screens, right? It's just a computer program that you have to write to basically show a clock on the big screen. So I don't understand why that hasn't been implemented. And yeah, it looks like they'll be doing that now.
Yeah, it's something they definitely should have done. disappointing to see TJ Perenara pick up an injury in this one. I mean, he's been out for a good 18 months since he ruptured his Achilles back in 2022. He missed the World Cup, making a return to the black jersey and picks up a knee injury. So he'll be missing the upcoming fixture this weekend.
Yeah, TJ is definitely one of my favorite players. So it's not nice to see him out. And yeah, let's hope it comes right soon enough.
Yeah, another big game ruled out with injury from this one is Joe Marler. He's not going to be available anymore, so they've had to call up another player from England, another uncapped player. But Ronnie, we just need to take a second here to talk about the prop that came on for Joe Marler, a young Finn Baxter. Someone described it on Facebook as a player that had a filter put on them to make them look like a baby. He looked like a child.
I'd love to see what his face would look like if you applied that filter to him, because honestly, he does look like he's 2.5 years old.
It was unreal when I saw that on the TV screen. I couldn't believe that. Like, I thought we'd switched over to the under-20s or something like that.
Yeah. No, honestly, Finn Baxter, my man. Yeah. He is a youngster, of course. So he's got a bit of baby face on him, but he looks very, very young.
Yeah, that's for sure, Ronnie. A bit of a reality check delivered to Razor in this one, though, and he said as much. He said, you know what, this has just shown him that this is not Super Rugby. They're going to have to step it up. They're going to have to pick it up. And yeah, it's definitely setting the scenes for a lacquer return fixture. What did you make of that game?
Yeah, look, the reality is that they haven't played since the end of the World Cup, right? They haven't had a Six Nations to come together, much like the South African. So you expect a bit of rust. And not only that, it's a new coach, the new players, it's a new captain, it's a new systems that they are practicing. You know, it's definitely going to take time for them to sort of fit the mold that Razor's put out there. So, you know, they're going to be bumping heads, they're going to be making mistakes, they're going to be a little bit rusty. And I think, you know, they can count their lucky stars that they came away with a win against England there, because, you know, it could have very easily gone the other way. But yeah, give them some time. Give them, you know, that the shoe needs to start fitting the foot, the mold around the foot, and then they're going to be excellent.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up quite perfectly there. It's an entirely new system, coaching setup, set of players. So it's going to take time to adapt. And like you say, we've also not played the Six Nations. So any rustiness there is going to be shaken now as they progress into their season. Then Ronnie, the Wallabies. So also a new coach under Joe Schmidt there. He got them off to a win against the Welsh, 25 points to 16. This sees Wales drop to 11th on the world rankings, which is quite shocking.
The first time in their history that they are out of the top 10. I found that quite surprising. But also, we have to ask ourselves, the Welsh are the most inconsistent first-class team that there is, right? Because the Wales, briefly, very briefly, held number one in the world a couple of years ago. It was temporarily over a weekend. You know, but they've played the Springboks in 2019 in the semi-final, pushed it very close. You know, they've done very well over the years. Springboks have struggled to them. They've been up and then they, as much as they've been up, they've also been so down. And it's, I find that incredibly strange. Sure, at the moment, new players, they are definitely, of all the teams, rebuilding probably the most. And yeah, you could expect maybe 11 suits them around that now based on their performance. But geez, they are up and down.
Yep, absolutely, Ronnie. They really are. Gatland says he's looking for a side to show a little bit more fight. So hopefully we'll get that in the return fixture out of the Welsh Dragons. Then on to the game we know we really want to talk about, and that was the Springboks 27-20 point victory over the Irish. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the game, just a bit of a laugh. I don't think it's related at all, but did you see after that loss, now we've got to have visas to enter Ireland?
That's in Botswana. I don't know how Botswana got roped into that, but yeah, I did see that. Thank you, Irish. It's just a game. Relax, man.
Relax a little, guys. Woo, sir. Yeah, Ronnie. So first win for the Springboks against the Irish in 8 years. Let's just put that out there because that's the stat that the Irish were clinging to ahead of this one. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, we've only played in 3 times in 8 years or what is it? Something like that, right? Yeah. Look, I think if we look back at the last 10 games, it's 50-50. So.
Yep. And the last time they were in South Africa, they also got beaten. So There we go.
Yeah, so you could slice it whichever way you want, and you could paint the picture for either side. But yeah, we won. So I think we were lucky to win, but we won.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get your opinion on some of the TMO stuff and why you say we're lucky to win since you got to watch it on TV. But can we first just chat about Cheslin Kolbe's try off of that James Lowe keep it in touch move? Because, may fuck, John, that was incredible to see live.
Yeah, well, he joins Valley LaRue, right? So you keep chasing. You never give up, right? So we saw when we beat the All Blacks a couple of years ago, Valley LaRue, they took a quick line out to Valley LaRue, kept chasing, and they messed it up, and Valley LaRue scored the try. And that's what Kolbe did. He chased the lost cause, and it paid off, and he scored a try. And he did that in the World Cup, and without him, we would not be world champions, right? So any youngster playing rugby, you know, sometimes the youngsters do it, right? So the coach is always like, chase the ball, and then the youngsters chase. And as you get older, you're like, oh, that's someone going to chase. Like, that never happens. But yeah, Cheslin Kolbe just proved that it does.
Yeah, you're there for that 1% more, hey? That one time that it's going to work out. And there we go, proof of it happening. But I think James Lowe had a bit of a tough day at the office, and not because he's not a good player. I think he was in the role where he was trying to assist the young fullback on debut, caught out of position a few times, made a few hasty decisions, which painted him a little bit bad, but still a top quality winger for the Irish.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he'll look back on that game and want to forget about it. And he had an off day at the office because he wasn't lucky as well. Like, you know, it's just the fact, the perspective of the referee and the question that he asked of the TMO, you know, is there any reason that, you know, that he was in touch? And there's no conclusive evidence that he was in touch. But if the question was, you know, is there any reason that the ball stayed in? You know, the TMO would come to the same conclusion. There's no evidence that the ball stayed in. So I think James Lowe got very unlucky, but he still did really well to keep Ireland in the game. And if it wasn't for James Lowe, they would have lost by more.
Well, we're on the topic of the TMO now, so that's one of the situations. What about James Lowe's disallowed try? You would have seen that on the TV, Ronnie. What did you make of that call?
Well, that's a little bit unfortunate, right? So the TMO called their back, there was check, and then they called back, they said, you know, this player booked the ball while being off his feet in the ruck, and that's what allowed Ireland to turn over the ball, which ultimately led to the try. And there's so many ways, there's so many things out of this, right? So firstly, we have to state that we are trialing a new TMO protocol. That is what's happening at the moment with Ireland. Jaco Pepa made that very clear. The Irish agreed to this new protocol. And that gives the TMO a little bit more room to review and a little bit more extra stuff to review before the lead up to a try. But yeah, look, to me, it seemed like the guy was falling, you know, and in the process of falling, he hooks the ball back. You know, it's an involuntary movement. So can you really be penalized for an involuntary movement? Yeah, in rugby, potentially you can, but I don't think so. I don't think you should be. And I thought it was very harsh. I do. And I think on any other day, it could have gone as easily the other way. So Ireland were very lucky to get another difficult call go against them.
Yeah, I think you've summed that up perfectly there, Ronnie. It is a new TMO protocol. It's luck of the draw. Sometimes these calls go for you, sometimes they go against you. And it's just the way this one panned out. But
what I will say is many years ago, John Smith was asked to speak to his players on the Irish scored in the corner, and I believe that was at Loftus. And so I saw this as a bit of payback, right? So, you know, the referee, the ball bounced our way this time, and we got the rub of the green. So I'm going to take it, and I'm not going to feel too guilty about it.
Fair enough, Ronnie. Good point. But now, what do you make of these comments? We spoke about it, you know, saying Sears transparent, Sears out of form. If that's the case, you really can't blame Robbie Henshaw for not seeing Sears coming his way then. Sears hit him like a freight train.
Yeah, well, his name is Sia for a reason. So, yeah, look, I think there's a definite difference between how the players play for their domestic teams, for their club sides, and then also for the Springboks. For some reason, you know, and we as fans do it as well. As soon as there's Springbok rugby, we all take it to a whole new level. Like, we're all these passive, we're nice people when it comes to club rugby, or nice enough at least. But when the Springboks start to play, we go to a whole different gear. We change. We become monsters, right? And I think the same goes for the players, right? So maybe he's not doing so well at Russing. You know, I don't watch too much of the top 14 to really give an objective opinion here. It'd be very subjective because I'm a big fan of Sia, and I think he does very well. Wherever he touches the ball, he does exceptionally well. But, you know, great game for the Springboks. So couldn't be happier.
But you also have to look at it from the perspective of the motivating factors. Because in France now, you're playing at a club where your owner says, look, you're fat, transparent, out of form, blah, blah, blah. Here you get to the Springboks and Rassie's like, see ya, this is for that boy in Zwide that can't afford his rugby boots. I mean, look at the motivating factors behind what you want to perform for and how the coaches are treating you as well. So I think it's quite a convoluted issue, but definitely comments that were very out of place if you watch Sia at the weekend.
Yeah, so firstly, I think we also just have to clarify, Sia's the owner of the club actually called him invisible. So Rassie, who used his best Afrikaans and converted invisible to transparent. So,
so much of a muchness, Ronnie. Either. We got a question from Jonathan, or more of a comment on something that he noticed in the game. And I hadn't picked up on it beforehand. So I'm going to throw this question to you, Ronnie, as a former Orange Peeler / eighth man. Caelan Doris, firstly, for the Irish, had a cracker of a game at the back of that scrum. He's a top quality player. And on our side, we had Quagga, who we know is not an out and out eighth man, an absolute incredible workhorse of a player, an incredible man. You want him on the field for as long as possible. But being pointed out that Quagga struggled under the high balls, you know, the traditional eighth man role that Dwayne and Jasper were fulfilling. How important is that to the game of an eighth man, Ronald?
No, it is important, and that's why I was one of the best eighth men from the low felt, you know. It's excellent under the high ball, never dropped the ball. No, but look, I think you used the word traditional eighth man there, right? So, and we know that Rassie's anything but traditional. You know, he introduced the bomb squad and all these other, you know, firstly, he built the unit out of his front row, brought his front row together, and then he built the unit out of his forwards and brought them on together. So he does things definitely non-traditionally. And look, in the back of the day, the eighth man should have been good under the high ball, but things change. You know, the loose forwards, you know, you could play six at eight and eight at seven and seven at six. You can play them anywhere, and you know, they've all got to be able to do the same thing. One of the basics or functions of a rugby player is to catch the ball, right? So I wouldn't say that this is just for an eighth man to do, but yeah, look, it's just obviously where he stands. He stands a little bit deep where Dwayne Vermeulen used to stand, and you know, the ball kept coming to him. So look, it's just unfortunate. I think it's a bit of nerves, a bit of rust. You know, it's a big occasion. I think, you know, Quagga dropped those balls, and I could chalk that up to the same reason why Pollard's kicking was so terrible.
Yeah, well, talking about Pollard's kicking, then before we move on to the bomb squad, Tony Brown saying he reckons Pollard was a bit rusty for post. I mean, he hasn't played since May, and the fatigue in the legs is probably what made him miss a few. Because, I mean, he still slotted conversion over from the touchline, but he was skew with a few. Crowley was skew with a few. So not the greatest kicking day at Loftus.
From either side, right? So I think it's 6 out of 12 if you combine the two sides, the two kickers together. So both sides did very poorly. And look, if Ireland kicked, it was going to be a different game. If the box kicked, it would have been a bigger win for them. You know, that's just the reality of Test match rugby. You got the two best teams in the world, potentially, Ireland. And then you're hammering each other out in a very physical Test match at altitude. The brain is tired. The legs are tired. The body's sore. It's been a long season for the Irish, and it's been no season for the Springboks. So there's a lot of factors at play here, and the guys are going to make mistakes. Quagga's going to drop a couple of balls, a couple of passes are going to go awry, and you're going to miss a couple of kicks. So wouldn't be too worried about it. I think both sides, or at least the Springboks, did well for their second game of the season.
Yeah, I do agree with you there, Ronnie. And as with the
of course you do. I'm a genius.
Is it? I thought you were going to say because I'm an orange peeler, but okay.
Genius orange peeler.
There we go. So anyone that thinks we're up for an easy game against the Irish in the return fixture is madly off their mark. One was in the balance right till the end. I mean, 137 tackles made by each side, 21 missed tackles by each side with a 87% completion rate.
Yeah, so the figures that I have are slightly different, but it is definitely at that stage. You know, 140-odd tackles both sides. When is the last time you saw that? You usually see one dominant side, never two very physical sides. You know, that's a lot of tackles to make. And, you know, missing 21, sure, it's a lot, but you're still making 140 tackles. That's going to hurt. And I don't care who you are. You know, your team, you're going to get tired. You can be the fittest oak, strongest oak, and then you make 140 tackles and you're going to sweat and you're going to feel it and you're going to be sore.
Yeah, well, Peter Steph, the toy of the mobs, really missile making 21 of those tackles. Out of the last four players to have made more than 20 tackles in a match, he's done three of those, including the World Cup final last year. I'm sure Jordy Barrett's still feeling that. But Ronnie, in a game as close as this, where you see the stats so close, you really do need that point of difference that's going to separate you. You know, that one thing you're going to be able to do, whether it's 2019 and you're doing the move, or it's something you've cooked up to get a scrum in your 22 by calling the mark. You know, you need to do something different. And in this game, in the 49th minute, Rassie Erasmus decided, let's do it, boys. Six forwards onto the field at once. And let me tell you, Loftus exploded. That was so cool to see. But then we have the guys that need a box of tissues up north this time. Matt Williams.
Maddie.
Yeah. Good old Maddie coming out and saying that the bomb squad discriminates against backs. Now, I don't know about you, but I was always raised that forwards win matches, backs determined by how much. Maddie seems to have forgotten that.
Yeah, sorry. I don't really know who Matt Williams is, right? I mean, obviously now he's come out and but his relevance, what's his, you know, how does he have an opinion, right? Sorry, I know I'm being a bit cheeky here by saying that, but he's probably a nice oak and his credentials are he has been coach and player before. But the reality is, you know, Rossi's doing nothing wrong. And you know, we Jakub Paper even mentioned that there was a paper written that said that bringing fresh players onto the field actually reduces injuries. You know, I don't understand what people's problem is with the bomb squad. They're looking for a reason to complain, right? They're looking. And firstly, Matt Williams' angle was, it's dangerous for the game. Then when people were like, no, well, we don't really care about your opinion, he's now changed his tune and said, no, it discriminates against the backs. Oh, rubbish, man. Rubbish. It's, you know, we don't want to discriminate against props, but that doesn't mean we're going to put 14 props on the field, right? You know, there's still, based on the rules of the game, how the game is played, you know, it works itself out. So, it's just ridiculous. I don't know what to say. I just want to throw something at it.
Yeah, I think these guys complaining need to realize that everyone can do it. Literally everyone can do this. It's not something that only the Springboks are allowed to do. Do you want to take the risk and compose your bench this way? Do it. If you want to put seven backs on the bench, do it. It's up to you. Go for it. The only rule is that there must be a complete set of front row replacements. Outside of that, do as you please. And you know what? Ultimately, they can change all the rules they want. Rassie's innovative. The South African people are innovative. We're always going to cook something up. And I pointed it out to you. The last international side that was really innovative, Italians. Who was involved there? Brendan Fenta. So, you know, I mean, it's part of the game. You play to the rules and get on with it. Matt, you are completely misplaced, my friend. Let's then go over to Los Pumas versus France. This is a game we both predicted Argentina would win. They ultimately lost at 28 points to 13. 3-2 in a vastly inexperienced French side on the field. Baptiste Serin, if I'm correct, was their most capped player on the pitch with about 40 caps.
We have to apologize, though, because we said that France is clearly not taking this seriously. You know, this is disgraceful, right? And, you know, they are disrespecting their opposition. And they went off and they pulled off a win. And quite a convincing win. So we do actually have to give them the credit, right?
Yeah. So I don't know what went on with Los Pumas there. That's yeah, an unexpected scoreline for me, but well done to Les Blues. They got a victory there on tour. Then
tough day at the office for Felipe Contepomi, you know, taking over as coach there. So we haven't mentioned that on this podcast yet. So it's not a good start for Felipe, but, you know, we absolutely hope that they could turn things around, especially because as we are recording right now, France is actually playing Uruguay.
Yeah, so you're right.
So, yeah, let's see what happens on the weekend.
But, Ronnie, also, Argentina, the only Southern Hemisphere side to lose at the weekend. It was a clean sweep other than that. So, well done to the Southern Hemisphere for those fixtures. But, oh, Canada, 12 points to 73 against the Scots. Not a good one for the Canadians. Also seem to be regressing in their game from the days of, you know, some big names doing the rounds there.
DTH from Amerva.
Yeah, there we go. So 10 new caps handed to Scottish international players, 11 tries to 2. Ronnie, that is an ass-kicking if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, dude, that makes me think of the time when you and I used to play Xbox rugby and I'd whoop you 73-12 on the Xbox.
Yes, sir. Did you bump your head this morning?
Yeah, look, well, that's to Scotland, right? Let's give them a bit of credit. You're right, Canada's regressed a little. You know, they were hoping to get into the World Cup. They didn't. That is unfortunate. But, you know, Scotland needs a win. And I think World Rugby did them a bit of a disservice by giving them Canada as, and then the USA and Chile as their, you know, mid-year tour. But, you know, they went on. They bloody well scored 73 points, 11 tries. That's good for, doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah, no, very, very well done to the Scots. Ronnie, let's quickly take a run through the weekend's fixtures then, because there's a lot of rugby coming up again. So I'm going to toss it back and forth, and you can make the first prediction. USA versus Scotland.
Scotland.
Canada versus Romania. That's a 1 a.m. kickoff. I think Romania is going to take that one by at least 20 points. What about Tonga versus Italy, Ronnie, at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, I know. So Italy have acclimatized. They're enjoying the Pacific Islands. They're having a good time. You know, they're going to win this one. So Italy.
Then over to Manu Samoa hosting Spain at 3 a.m. I'm going to give a victory to Samoa here of a good 15 points. I think they're going to take this one. What about the return fixture then, Ronnie? 9:05, the All Blacks take on England.
You know, I love the All Blacks. I really do. But I'd also like to see an England win. You know, I feel a little bit sorry for England at the moment. They came close as possible. I would like to see them. But I think the reality is the All Blacks will win. Maybe by 6 or 8 points.
Because this is a big one, I'm going to predict England by 2. Ronnie, then at 11:45, we have the Wallabies hosting the return fixture against Wales. Can Gatland get his men fired up? What are your predictions on this one?
No, the Wallabies, I believe in Joe Schmidt a little bit more than Warren Gatland and his team of youngsters.
I have to agree with you on that one, Ronnie. Then at 12:05, Japan hosting Georgia. This is a very difficult one to pick.
This is a difficult one. This is going to be a good game to watch. If you want to watch a game of the weekend, watch this one.
Also a swing game on our Super Brew, these ones that are hard to pick. I'm going to go for Japan by a narrow 3-4 point margin in this one.
I'll go for Georgia by 2-3 points.
Okay, so the swing vote for sure. Then, Ronnie, Namibia hosting Portugal at 3 p.m. Portugal warming up to play the Springboks in Bloem next weekend. Portugal also the shining light of Rugby World Cup 2023. They were my best Tier 2 nation. So what is your pick there?
No, you have to back Portugal for this one. They're fired up. They're going to put their team on that they expect to play for against the Springboks, and they're going to get them well-oiled and running. So, yeah, Portugal.
Then we have Los Pumas hosting France at 9 p.m. That really is an action-packed day of rugby, but I'm going to pick Los Pumas to get about an 8-point win in this one. I think Contempomi is going to fire up his charges. There's been some problems in the French camp as well, so let's see what happens there. Over then, Ronnie, to the one we actually want to talk about, and that is Box versus Ireland, fixture number 2 down in Durban. Kickoff at 5 p.m. You guys can catch it all on the socials. I'll be going live from the stadium, showing you guys around a bit and posting as much content as possible. But this is a big one, Ronnie. No changes to the Box 23.
Yeah, that was a bit surprising. And it took me quite a bit of time to figure out that there were no changes. When I saw the Box team that you had posted, I kept going through every name. I'm like, so who's different here? It took me a couple of minutes to realize that it's unchanged. And that says a lot as well. Or it says nothing, but also says something. I don't really know why Rusty's putting the same team on there. Why is he not putting some other players out there? Why is he not rotating? And I think maybe that says he wants to win this bloody series against Ireland. He wants to put this argument to bed now. So he's going to put the most experienced BOC team ever named. And look, this team grew with 23 caps from last week. That's what happened here. 23 caps were added after last week. So it's a very experienced side and they're getting better and better.
Yeah, so you're right, Ronnie. It is officially the most experienced Springbok side ever named, with 990 caps in the starting 15, which is unbelievable. So very keen to see it. It's only the team's second ever meeting at King's Park. That dates way back into the 70s when we last hosted them there. Carl Dixon from England will be the match official for this one. I'm happy with that. But Ronnie, a big injury list for the Irish after a physical battle at Loftus, hey? Dan Sheehan's out. He's got an ACL tear. Craig Casey's out with concussion. Nathan Doak's been called up to replace Casey. He's the uncapped Ulster 9. Got about 70 caps for Ulster, though, so he is an experienced 9. Dave Hefferman called up to replace Sheehan. He got the last of his 7 caps back in 2022. So those are their two main injury concerns, but then also clouds hanging over Robbie Henshaw with concussion, Jamie Osborne with a groin injury, Bundi Aki's got a sore shoulder, James Lowe's got a sore thigh, and Andrew Porter, sore hand. So Irish came off second in that physical battle by the looks of it.
Sorry, I fell asleep during the 10 minutes that you listed every single one of those injuries. That is a very long list.
It is. It's a very long list, and Ireland will struggle without many of those players or their absolute top players in their position.
Yeah, and a little bit concerning for the Irish, considering that the BOC walked away with no injuries and an unnamed side. So who's the tougher side?
Yeah, that's the question, hey, Ronald. So then just a little bit of news from this week. It's now confirmed that Newlands has been sold. We were there for the last test ever played in that stadium, Ronnie, the All Blacks Springboks in 2018.
Was that the last test ever played there? Really?
Yeah, and we were there.
Really, it was on the playoff. Well, that's so sad to see Newlands go, but I enjoy Greenpoint a little bit too much now.
Yeah, so it's an undeclared purchase, but it does seem to be that Investec bought the stadium out. I'm curious what they intend to do with it. And then, Ronnie, Jamie Joseph appointed new coach of the Highlanders after stepping away from Japan to give Eddie Jones the coaching reins. I think that's a good appointment from the Highlanders. They struggled quite a bit this season.
Yeah, going back to his old team, right? So he's been there before and he was there with Tony Brown back in the day. So good to see Jamie Joseph heading back to something familiar. And yeah, hopefully the Highlanders can be a little bit more impactful next season.
Absolutely. Then, Ronnie, the May Fokchor moment of the week, and for no other reason than to really piss Matt Williams off, it's going to go to the BOC bomb squad and their absolute decimation of the Irish scrum to earn a penalty try late in the game and seal victory for the Springboks. Here on this podcast, we don't discriminate against the forwards. Well, guys, that's it for today's episode.
Thanks for joining for the banter and staying for the chat. May Fokchor, dit was lekker.
Make sure you smash that like button and subscribe on your preferred listening platform so you won't miss a moment of the madness.
Catch you back here next Wednesday.